This is Rewired Radio with Erica Spiegelman, addiction and wellness specialist, motivational speaker, and author, helping individuals, couples, and families regain a sense of control, leading to personal growth, wellness, and a more fulfilling life. Here's Erica Spiegelman.
Welcome, everyone. Vitality is the secret to a long and happy life. In today's fast-paced world, it can often be hard to find the time and energy to live a truly zestful life. But we all have the potential to really enjoy the fruits of vitality. My guest today, Dr. Lamiz Khurshid, is a psychologist who helps her clients harness the potential and begin enjoying their lives in a more energetic, exuberant, and passionate way. Today, she's here with us to share 7 tips that we all can follow, and it will enhance our vitality, our happiness, and a way that we can truly have a sustainable health. Dr. Khurshid, welcome to the show. I'm so honored to have you with me.
Hi, Erica. Thanks so much for having me.
It's just amazing. We were talking a little bit before we were on air about the word vitality. I'm such a big believer in creating intentions, setting intentions, creating an awareness around what certain words mean to us. And vitality is something where, you know, we all want to be happy. We all want to be productive, but what is having vitality, and how do we cultivate that?
Yeah, Erica, having vitality is more about feeling awake and energized and alive in your life. So often we're trying to get through our day, or maybe we just feel like our energy levels are very low and chronic fatigue might set in. Maybe by 4 or 5 o'clock, there's not much left to give to your family if you've just gone out for a work day. And vitality is about feeling energized throughout the day, sustaining really good levels of feeling alive and alert and not just trying to get by.
Absolutely. And I think most of us fight that feeling of being tired by caffeine, maybe some drugs, you know, energy drinks, sugar, you know, and I think that all of us would want to find a really healthy, holistic, and natural way to live a life of vitality. So how do you help people find that in their lives and sustain that kind of feeling? I know on a day to day, no one's perfect, and there's waves. We all of our lives go in waves. But what practices do you recommend people start with?
Yeah, absolutely. So Erica, what I want your audience to know is we waste a lot of energy. So there are some tips that you can do to reclaim your vitality and your energy. So what I want to talk to you about today are 7 top tips. One is managing your stress. We'll talk about different types of stress. And then working towards your goals, specific goals that can make you feel energized. And finding out where your time thieves are. So what's really burdening you and how to lighten that load. Sleep is really linked to energy and vitality. So I want to talk to you about how your sleep affects your energy levels. And then exercising, using exercise to fuel yourself. Using diet to revitalize yourself, and then how relationships come into play. So I can go ahead and go through those. Is this a good time to do that?
That would be
great.
Wonderful.
Absolutely. So let's start with stress. A lot of times, much of our stress is how we believe we can deal with our environment. And if we're walking through the day feeling like we don't have the resources to cope, whether it's with time, whether it's with energy, that thought alone can just zap some of your vitality. A lot of times we have thoughts that are laden in worry and fear or regret. Those thoughts actually produce sympathetic or stress responses in the body. Just having those thoughts throughout the day can make you really tired. So the first step would be to be aware of the thoughts. And are your thoughts going to positive places and in the moment? Or are they going to worries? Because the more they're going into worries and anxiety, that releases stress responses that will zap your energy. I can't tell you how many times I have a client, I hook them up to biofeedback, a device that measures how their thoughts affect their physical stress. And just those worry thoughts alone can create a lot of fatigue by the end of the day. And the second really important part about managing stress is we often brace our muscles when we're stressed, and we might not even be aware of it. You might clench your jaw, or a lot of people have shoulder tension because their shoulders rise to their ears when they're feeling stressed, or they clench different parts of their body, or they shake their leg underneath their desk from anxiety and restlessness. But what I want to tell you is all that activity, that clenching, that tightening, again, creates this stress response I'm telling you about, and it exhausts the body. So two things that you can walk away with in terms of managing stress are to keep your mind into the moment, into what you're doing in the here and now, or in positive places, and then to let go of all that extra muscle tension you're doing by bracing, or even by typing. Are you holding on to those shoulders while you're typing? And that's really zapping your energy, preventing you from being vital. That alone will double your energy on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. I can go on to some of the rest of the list. Is this a good time to do that?
Yeah, that would be great. I just want to say one thing really quick. I just know that there's so many people that do struggle with being tired, and they don't understand why. You know, oh, I got great night's sleep. I, you know, have been working out a little bit. But what we don't understand is that our emotional life is something very real, and that sometimes when we are not tuned into it, or we're not you know, giving it enough attention, that is where we get sucked dry of our energy. And I really am so happy that you shared that, because I don't think that we discuss that enough. We live in a physical world, and we don't, you know, what we see is kind of what goes, and that's not the case at all. And I just appreciate that. So yes, let's continue.
Erica, but what a great point. Our emotional world that we're perceiving definitely affects our body and our ability to be vital. But the other thing we're not aware of is if we look at our world and perceive it as stressful or as negative, mm-hmm. what actually happens is your breath becomes short and shallow, or you start to hold your breath. And you can mm-hmm. notice this in the future. Our audience can start to tune in. When you're around what you perceive a stressful situation, it might be the demands of the office, it might be a person that you're around, your body reacts by holding its breath. And the more you hold your breath or take short, shallow breaths, that activates stress hormones. And what I see is many people hold their breath or do short, shallow breathing throughout the day. And if you did that throughout the day, by 4 or 5 o'clock, your body doesn't know the difference between work stress or day-to-day stress and running from a tiger. Mm-hmm. And many people physically are running from a tiger without being aware of it, just by perceiving their environment as stressful. So a really great tip would be to monitor your breath throughout the day and to consciously start to slow it down and to do diaphragmatic breathing, which will tell your body everything's okay. We're not running from a tiger, that this is just some paperwork that needs to be done by the end of the day. So regulating your breath and your thoughts are such a large part of being vital again.
Yeah, and oh my gosh, this is such an important topic. I do think that unfortunately what happens in the brain is we create pathways, if we have enough years doing this, there's been a pattern. There's been something that has happened in our brains where, you know, if you're in a relationship, let's just say, and I know we'll talk about relationships later, that's toxic in a way, or you're just not speaking your truth, or you just don't want to be confrontational and you're holding something in, you know, that also, I think, affects your breath. And I know, cause I have people, couples and families that come in, a family member doesn't want to have a conversation with another family member. And she basically feels like she's on eggshells and holds her breath every time she's around her mother. You know, I mean, all these different relationships we have, if we're not speaking our truth, we're not communicating effectively, we're not taught how to do that, also induces the stress response, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you brought up relationships, because that's one of the tips in becoming more vital, is to identify some patterns you have in relationships, and are they working towards a healthy relationship or away? You know, there's a man named Dr. John Gottman, a psychologist who studied relationships for 30 years. And he did some research on what makes relationships work. And what he found were there are 4 things we tend to do in relationships that harm them. And that's criticism, being defensive back and forth with our partners, stonewalling, getting upset and just ignoring our partners, or contempt, blaming the person beyond the behavior that you don't like. And what he found are there are things we can actually do to create vitality in relationship, which is going to create vitality in day-to-day living. And that's really learning your partner's likes and dislikes rather than assuming them. And then to have moments of connection with your partner. So throughout the day, doing the little things that help when there's a bigger conflict, it sort of creates an emotional bank account when you do the little things so that when there is conflict, you can rest on the fact of that you've created love in the relationship. And the reason I'm emphasizing this is oftentimes relationships get complacent. You know, you feel like your relationship's in a good place, so you don't have to do the little things, the text message or the call here or there, or the small surprise to let your partner know you're actually thinking of them. So actually making an intention of putting these back into the relationship will bring that vitality. And then when the conflicts come out, they won't feel as bad. And the third thing that you can do to improve relationships is to avoid gridlock problems. And these are problems that really don't go anywhere. It might be an issue that every time it comes up, there's no solution because you each have different values about it. So really identifying these gridlock situations and avoid talking about that problem. A lot of times you hear you should talk about problems in a relationship. You should, but the ones that don't have a resolve actually erode the relationship. So you want to avoid them. And a really interesting thing about relationships is oftentimes we're not communicating in a language that the other person can understand. And these we call these love languages. And this started with a man named Chapman, Dr. Chapman, who studied, who studied what is it, how do you communicate with your partner to express love? And if you're expressing love in a language that your partner doesn't understand, it might not mean anything to them. So this might make sense as I explained to you, there are five love languages. So acts of service, doing nice things for people, quality time, spending time with your partner, physical touch. So hand holding, a hug, having intercourse, those things of ways of physically connecting with your partner. So the more we learn what our partner likes, is it quality time? Is it gifts? Do they like to receive things or acts of service? Do you like to have things done for you? When we know which one our partner likes, we can use that specific love language to express love. And what we see is if your love languages don't connect, like let's say you're a physical touch person and your partner doesn't like physical touch, they want gifts and they're not getting that. If each person doesn't get that need met, then the love feels lacking, even though both are trying. So I'm bringing this up because the more you know what your partner's love language is, what their preference is, you can communicate in these ways. And when you do, you hit a home run with your partner and you have vitality in the relationship.
Absolutely. I think that's a wonderful book. And Dr. Chapman is, I think, a visionary when it comes to this, because I've seen it to be true. We all do communicate differently. And to also have the willingness to shift. If you're somebody that likes words of affirmation and your partner is somebody that, you know, likes acts of service and wants you to they cook for you or do their laundry or something like that, we have to kind of try and compromise and meet someone where they're at as well. So there is a choice point in this. And I know, you know, you were talking also about Dr. Gottman and he was also, you know, he gives the ways that will destroy our relationships, but and you were speaking to what would actually help save us. And I think you touched upon something where whatever language you speak, to show appreciation for that person. And sometimes I know it's wise to just create a practice of that, like even once a week, just kind of, you don't have to say, hey, I appreciate the fact that you always ask me how my day is, but to just say like, I appreciate you asking me that today, you know, or just reminding each other. I think it's maybe is that a good way to kind of start to create that like emotional bank account, like you said?
Absolutely. I can't tell you how important that is. And I want to explain to you why that goes awry. So really making an intention of positive emotion in the relationship takes work. Our mind is often going to what's wrong or what it hasn't done well. You know, 80% of our thoughts are negative on average because our mind tends to worry about what hasn't been done, what hasn't gotten done. So the reason I'm bringing this up is we have a negativity bias. When something bad happens, our mind wants to go to it and it remembers it. It remembers it vividly, clearly, and it's preparing you for it happening again. So in a relationship, when your partner doesn't do something or maybe something was missing, your mind wants to gravitate towards that, even though there were eight other things that went well during that moment. Mm-hmm. So being aware of that negativity bias and really trying to overcome it by pointing out the positives takes a conscious effort and really takes practice in a relationship. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. And what if, you know, because I also hear this a lot, you know, that people have, not only do they hang on to maybe the negative things that have happened, but people have a lot of fears, a lot of fears that maybe aren't based in reality, maybe some that are based in reality. But I know that a lot of us come with a lot of baggage when we get into new relationships. We've had our hearts broken, we've broken hearts, we've maybe in our household, what we saw mirrored was a father that, you know, wasn't faithful, or a mother that left, or, you know, we learn from our environments when we're young. How do we begin to heal those fears, move through the fears, and allow a new relationship to kind of have a chance, or even an old relationship to reset, you know, reset and look at it with a new set of eyes? You know, I think that's so important. And I know that fears are very normal. I would say that they're healthy in a way, but how do we gauge whether it becomes it starts to affect us and our relationships in negative ways when those fears take over?
Yeah, great question. So when fears come into play, and they could come in relationship, or they could come in day-to-day life, using a technique called mindfulness, bringing your mind back to the here and now, into what's going on, helps reduce some of that anxiety. You know, to be honest, what happened 1 year ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, it's not relevant anymore. And a lot of times we live in the rearview mirror in the past. And when we're staring at that rearview mirror long enough, we're going to crash into what's right in front of us. And it takes training. Actually, when you do mindfulness practices in terms of bringing your mind to the here and now constantly over and over again, in 8 weeks, you can rewire the brain. And the brain will become more alert and more present just by this daily practice of bringing it back continuously over and over again. The other part, which is mindfulness in relationship, would be also to treat each day as a brand new day. And in mindfulness, we call that beginner's mind, because every day your partner is changing and they're learning new things and growing with your partner to be mindful and to let go of the things that have hurt you or that have made mistakes that negativity bias is going to try to pull you towards. What a lot of people don't know in relationship is you actually tend to choose a partner who has the best of your parents and the worst of your parents. We have unconscious drives that we're not aware of that pull us towards what's comfortable in the past, whether that comfortable was good or bad. And so what a lot of couples do is they choose a partner who has the best and worst of their parents, and then they get upset that their partner has the worst of their parents. And I often tell them, you actually chose your partner unconsciously because they were missing those things, because the mind wants resolve. And so it chooses a partner where it feels like it can resolve those things, but the partner didn't have the ability to begin with. And what's really healing in relationships is to identify your past hurts and to ask your partner for something that would help heal them. So, for example, let's say you had a parent that was never around. You can ask your partner for more quality time and plan that into the day so that you get that need met, but ask for that need versus getting into a nagging or an argument with your partner for not being able to provide that need that they didn't have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I think that there's, you know, sometimes we, like, let's say we don't have consistency in our lives growing up, and maybe we find a partner that is consistent. And I think that is something to recognize, that we are maybe in that to heal. You know, I mean, I think that there's a lot of healing involved. Sometimes we do have to be more mindful and ask for it. And then sometimes it's just good to see it just taking shape, and that it actually maybe was somewhat of a subconscious decision, but yet it is something that is working itself out in that way. And maybe saying, you know, I really appreciate your consistency. I didn't get that when I was younger, or whatever that is to kind of reinforce the fact that you do appreciate it, that it is healing to you, it feels better to you, so that your partner is aware that that is something that is helpful.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, these healthy relationships, the healthier we can get our relationships, the more vital and energized we feel. Because it leads us to another tip in vitality. You know, when we feel like we're in a healthy relationship, we can lighten our load because there's two people that are now working towards communal goals, and you don't feel like everything falls on you. And the more you can communicate what those needs are to distribute your load, the easier and the happier your life will become, the more vital you'll feel. What I notice with a lot of people is they take on more than they can chew. They have to-do lists that they can't get to because it's not physically possible to get to all the things they have to do. So one thing that helps is to learn how to delegate, whether it's with your partner or with someone else, to lighten your load and to find out what are your priority tasks and what are tasks that really aren't a priority but you'd like to get to. So lightening your load and delegating out will help create more vitality. And on that same note, you want to find out those things that energize you and put those in your schedule like they're mandatory things. And we know there are certain things you can do to create vitality that energize. And those are the way you nourish your body, your sleep, and your exercise. So when it comes to diet, a lot of people eat on the run or they're eating things that might not be the best for them because it's convenient. But this is sort of like having a Ferrari and putting peanut butter in the gas tank and hoping that it runs really well. And a lot of people take fuel in and it's not really healthy for their body. And it's not really fueling them well. So one thing I encourage is to really take the time to plan or prep your meals so that you're able to fuel in energizing ways, even if it's just packing some to-go items or taking 10 minutes to make something that you'd be able to take with you and have readily available. And the other thing that will help energize you is exercise. Just 10 minutes is enough to boost your mood. And when you exercise, actually, if you took a 50-year-old and a 70-year-old, and the 50-year-old was sedentary and the 70-year-old was active, your 70-year-old is physically healthier than your 50-year-old who's sedentary. And your 70-year-old is younger than your 50-year-old who's sedentary. The 70-year-old active person is healthier and has more energy than your 50-year-old who's sedentary. And here's why. When you exercise, you distribute oxygen to your cells and your mitochondria, and you actually can function better. You have more energy. So when I meet with clients, there's a myth that if I exercise, I'm going to lose energy, but actually the opposite happens. When you exercise, you gain energy. You gain more oxygen to your cells and to your circulatory system. And the mitochondria get more oxygen, you actually start to feel more energized. So that's another quick tool. The third thing I want to talk to you about is sleep. And we know sleep is very important for energy. And if you're not getting that magical number of 7 hours for each night of sleep, then you're probably working at a slowed pace and you're not able to take in as much information or store as much information. So making sure that you're getting adequate sleep is going to help you feel more vital during the day, and it's going to make the difference between being able to attend to things and having more energy to deal with stress versus if you're sleep deprived.
Absolutely. These tips are they are outstanding. I mean, there's so many people that ask me these questions all day long, these are healthy ways to have vitality. These are healthy ways to deal with stress and cope with life. I mean, this is all natural, healthy ways that it's actually going to sustain. And we can use these tips and tools if we put them in place right now for the rest of our lives. These aren't band-aids. These aren't quick fixes. These are things that actually help us create a new pathway for us to understand ourselves better. And when stress does come up, because life is full of stressors, we're going to have deaths, we're going to have breakups, we're going to have, you know, life goes on. We need these tools. And I'm so grateful that you're sharing this with us today, because I think that there's a lot of people that are lacking this information of how to deal with stress and how to deal with life and healthy grounding ways. Instead, there's distractions. There's the internet, there's food, there's drinking, there's pills, there's gambling, there's shopping, you know, there's all these other ways in which we distract. And I just wanted to ask you, you know, before we run out of time, on how you help people become more mindful of how they distract and maybe how they could begin to maybe create more solitude or, you know, set up a practice where they could reconnect with themselves. But how do we do that? Because I don't know, would you say that is something you see common, that we just distract and try to keep ourselves busy?
Yes, Erica, you couldn't say that better. You know, a lot of times we think we can multitask, and there's really no such thing. There's only shifting between tasks. And we know that the more you shift between tasks, so you're in flow, and then you go to pick up a text message, you're in flow, and then you get a Facebook notification. The more times we shift tasks, the longer it takes to shift back. You can't multitask. So what really help people is to bring the focus to what you're doing, to introduce mindfulness. So when your mind wanders off somewhere, to bring it back and to work just with the task at hand. Distractions will always be in your environment. You always get pulled to an email, a notification, a ding, a bing, a phone. You know, and it's really up to you how often you shut off these notifications or set time to check your email versus constantly shifting back and forth, and to create a small amount of time each day where you're just in silence, where you can hear those thoughts and bring the mind to the breath and to a focal point so that it's not in constant states of wandering.
Absolutely. That's so important. Thank you so much for sharing this. You are a wealth of information. I think you're the most knowledgeable woman that I've talked to in a very long time. Thank you, Dr. Khurshid, for being with us today. And can you tell everybody where they could find you?
Sure. Yeah. My website is Dr. Lanise Khurshid, DrLanieseKhurshid.com. And the email is, again, DrLaniseKhurshid@gmail.com.
Wonderful. And you are in Los Angeles, correct? Do you see people privately, individuals and families and things like that?
Yes, I do many speaking events across the United States, and I also see individuals and families for health and happiness coaching.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being with me today. I appreciate your time and energy. You're listening to Rewired Radio on Radio MD. I'm Erica Spiegelman. Thank you all for joining us, and stay well.